Welcome to HealthScope on WMKV and WLHS. Each week at this time, we bring you updates on a different medical topic and open the phone lines for you to join the discussion. Now, HealthScope on 89.3 WMKV, 89.9 WLHS, and online at WMKVFM.org.
And we thank you for joining us here on WMKV and WLHS, streaming around the world. And we are talking today about a very important topic, physical medicine and rehabilitation. We have a physiatrist here with us, Dr. Angela Stillwagon. She is a physiatrist, I'll get this right here, at UC Health, assistant professor of neurology and rehabilitation medicine at the University of Cincinnati. You can find out more about the program at uchealth.com. She practices both at Drake Hospital and at Westchester Hospital for all of our Butler County listeners. And the appointment number there is 513-475-8730. We'll give all that information as the show goes on. Dr. Stillwagon, thank you so much for coming in with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Now, this is a word, and I even had to ask you the correct pronunciation, which shows you how much I know about your area of medicine. And you are a physiatrist. You practice in physical medicine and rehabilitation, or PM and R. So yep. If people hear us say that later in the show, they'll be in on what we're saying. But what is a physiatrist and what do you do?
That's a very good question, because I never knew what a physiatrist or PM&R physician did until I went to medical school. So a lot of people in the community don't really know what we do, and some of our colleagues aren't quite sure all the special things that we can do and help provide for the patient. But what we do is we focus on improving a patient's quality of life and function, which has been impaired from some type of injury or disease process. So that could be a wide range of things, such as simple things like muscle strains, joint pain, arthritis of a joint, chronic low back pain. But then we also get into other things such as injuries or aftercare from a spinal cord injury, brain injury, strokes. We work with patients that have deficits after being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So there's a lot of variety of things that we can do.
And once again, this is an area where literally when we talk about the musculoskeletal system as well as the nerves, just about any part of the body could end up being affected here, I have a feeling.
Yes.
And we'll get into that as we go. But we have Dr. Angela Stillwagon here with us. Before we get to a lot of the different types of conditions, some of which you've just enumerated there for us, how did you come to this field? You mentioned that you didn't know what a physiatrist was until you went to medical school. What was the tipping point that said, I want to become a doctor of osteopathy?
Well, the one thing with doctor of osteopathy I loved, before actually I was went to medical school, I was a licensed massage therapist. I loved using my hands. And with being a doctor of osteopathy, the one difference between an allopathic physician and a doctor of osteopathy, or a DO, is we learn manipulation. There's different types. So that is one difference, that with physical medicine rehab, we have a little more hands-on approach. I could still use my manipulation techniques during caring for the patient.
Now, there are some people out there, if I can take you to that term, who hear the word manipulation and are not sure what that means. We're not talking about trying to psychologically get someone to think a different way. Manipulation, meaning physical manipulation in this case, what does that generally entail?
Well, there's different types. You know, I think sometimes people are used to hearing, they want to hear the pop, snap, crackle, and pop when they get the manipulation.
Ouch.
Yes.
I could do that just standing up with an arthritic knee, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, so there's different techniques. So that's called like a high velocity manipulation. And then there's others that are a low velocity where they're more subtle. You don't have as much, like I say, that quickness in the manipulation. But like I say, that could be with some chronic issues that when we assess a patient, we could help find those issues. And, you know, for example, sometimes people could have some upper back pain and it could be a rib could be out of place. And then we could do a very mild manipulation to help get that back in place. And the symptoms can significantly improve.
But one of the things that I think is really important for people to understand is that there's a lot of training in understanding to do the manipulation correctly, because I can imagine you could really mess things up if people don't know what they're doing, trying to manipulate. Go back to the you're probably too young to remember this, but in the Jeffersons TV show, they would have the guy come over from next door and walk on his back or whatever to make his back feel better, things like that. There are certain things I would imagine that you as a physiatrist know to do that, you know, any common Joe or Jane out there would go, oh, that's how that's done. But there's a lot of training here.
Yes, there's a lot of training. And that's as a physiatrist, you know, some physiatrists, I've had DO training. So I do the manipulation. Some of my colleagues, they did the allopathic. So they did not learn the manipulation. So there's a little difference there. But you're exactly correct in saying that there's a lot of training because some people, you know, our older population, they usually don't want to tolerate that high velocity. So that's why we do the more lower velocity to do something a little more comfortable for them. And plus, we know they have arthritis as they get older. So we don't want to hurt, we're not here to hurt anyone. We're only here to help.
When I think of high velocity, I think of having a broken nose reset where they say, okay, on three, and then one, two, snap. That's what I'm thinking of when I think of high velocity. But by and large, but it's knowing not just which technique to use, but how the manipulation works. And really, this gets into some real intricacy. Forgive me for dwelling on this, but I never get to talk to anybody about something like this, of the intricacy between the tendons, the muscles, the skeleton, the cartilage, all the connectors and everything, and then the nerves, which are incremental in all of this. You really have to understand how they all work together. Is that correct?
That is definitely correct. You know, we have to know where the muscles insert, where they start at, you know, how to shorten them. And, you know, we don't want to overdo anything, like I say, to cause any, you know, further injury or, you know, increased symptoms. So and you just have to know how all the, like you said, everything is connected. So if you and when we assess people, no matter if we're a DO or an MD, we look at the whole body because we want to see people sometimes have problems in their legs, but we're assessing their back. And it's because there might be something up there causing referred pain. So that's why we have to look at everything, because you could have a flat foot and your walk, your gait's altered, and then it's leading to your back pain. So, exactly.
We'll be going to the phones here in just a moment. We already have our first caller of the program, which is really good. But you mentioned one other term I want to get to before we get to the phones, and that's allopathic.
Yes.
You mentioned that. How is that different? Is that different from what you do in physical medicine and rehabilitation?
No. So, So what the difference is, we're both physicians. I'm a DO, that's the initials after my name, and an MD, and that's considered an allopathic physician. Really, we both do the exact same thing, except when our training, we learned how to do the manipulation. And so we could be we could specialize in anything we want. So there's DOs in general surgery, orthopedics. So they could do anything that an MD does, but like I say, I just happen to be a DO in physical medicine and rehabilitation.
You know what that means? DOs do.
Yes.
Right. There
exactly.
You go. There we go. Dr. Angela Stillwagon is here with us. And we have open phone lines if you'd like to join the conversation today at 772-9658. That's area code 513-772-9658. Or our toll-free number, 877-772-9658. I have a feeling that osteopathy works the same no matter whether you're calling from Cincinnati or, as Pam is doing, calling from California. Pam, thank you for holding on. You're on with Dr. Angela Stillwagon.
I'm sure it is. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. I always do this, Dr. Stillwagon. You have begun to answer my question, but I want to kind of clarify. I first start out by saying I'm confused. Because
you're listening to me, Pam. That's par for the course.
Oh well, George. We can live with that.
Okay.
I guess my question, because back as doctors of osteopathy, I remember back in the early days of the first time I heard of a doctor of osteopathy or an osteopath was.
Yep.
When my dad had to have stitches because he was playing around a hotel pool with the kids, like the big kid, and he ended up falling on his side and popping something open.
Yeah.
And I was telling a friend, and she said, and of course, now granted, I was like 11 or 12 myself, and he had been in an osteopathic hospital.
Yeah.
And I said to my friend, she's, oh, they're not doctors. In fact, she was kind of from the sticks. And she says, that's an osteopath doctor. They're not real doctors. And I think...
Sounds like them's fighting words.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Ours, no, but the question really is there more of an understanding now?
Yes, exactly.
Between the doctors of osteopathy and the MDs? Because I thought there was sort of an unspoken rivalry in that... well, the osteopaths didn't know as much. Obviously,
yeah,
it's a different specialty.
Yeah, but that's exactly right. Things definitely over time have changed. And, you know, we have a great relationship with the allopathic or the MD doctors. You know, they don't think of us as any different than they are because we've all had the same exact training. So it's been, you know, and you're right, there used to be specific only osteopathic hospitals, but that's really no longer. I'm from here in the Midwest, but not around here. There's no longer is. So, but you're exactly right that the thoughts have changed about the DOs.
Well, so. I came from Florida and things were pretty separate, but I did myself years later go to a doctor of osteopathy, and it's funny because you mentioned I happened to have fallen and come really darn hard on my rear, and he was the one who did the, because he's the person I'd been going to, and he was recommended, I know I hadn't been, and I went to him, and he x-rayed me and said, thank God there's no broken bones, and he did a little bit of spinal work, and so I was very impressed, and he, same doctor, did nurse the person who recommended me, her parents, through some really touch-and-go life-and-death issues. So I had no question as that he was definitely qualified in what he did, and I did not know if this was someone who just happened to know more about medicine, about what I would have called then standard medicine, but you've definitely answered the question. Now, are you in separate universities now, or there used to be colleges of osteopathy, weren't there?
Yeah. So there's a medical schools specifically for the for DOs, and then there's the allopathic doctors. So I don't want to say how many there are now, but there's over 15 of them in the United States.
But everybody works hand in hand.
Yep, exactly.
That is great. All right.
Very good.
Thank you.
Pam, thanks thank you for George. The call. Thank you. And, oh, and by the way, how do you know that Shakespeare actually had massage therapy at one time? What did he write?
Here we go. Tell us, George.
Aye, there's the rub.
Oh, George.
Sorry. Okay, I had to get that one in for Pam. Thanks, Pam. Thank you. You're listening to HealthScope here on WMKV and WLHS. We have Dr. Angela Stillwagon here with us. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's at 772-9658 or 877-772-9658. It sounds like from what Pam was saying, which is older history here,
sure.
Not saying Pam's old,
yeah.
That in earlier days, there was a schism or a division,
yes.
Was
yes.
There not? And here you are working at University Hospital in Westchester or at Drake. You're working right next to doctor or
yes.
to medical doctors. Forgive me. You're all doctors.
Yes. Right? Yep. Exactly.
So, Pam, thank you for. But that's very interesting and a little bit of a historic look at this. Now, let's get back to the conditions that you deal with.
Yep.
You rattled off a long list of things that you often are called in to deal with, or you have referrals from other physicians to deal with, or someone makes an appointment to see you as a physical medicine and rehabilitation doctor. Can you run down some of those again? And what are the things? Some of these seem like they can be like sudden trauma. Some of them could be something like arthritis or something that is, slower to onset. You cover the gamut, it sounds
yeah.
like.
So, yeah, we do. We work real well with other physicians, meaning we focus on a multidisciplinary approach or a team approach. Because when a patient, like, you know, primary care physicians anymore, you know, they have a lot of things they need to cover in an appointment. Mm-hmm. And so if someone comes in with back pain, they might not be able or have the time to address it to maybe the extent that we would because they have to do so many things. So they could refer to us. Then we would do, you know, a thorough history exam, do imaging, and then, you know, make our treatment plan based on that. But what we do is we keep close contact with a primary care physician. We work a lot with orthopedic surgeons when patients come in with multiple joint complaints, neck pain, like I say, low back pain. And, you know, they're not surgical candidates because obviously the orthopedic surgeons do surgery. But if they the patient is not a candidate, then they often refer to us to help take care of their symptoms by overseeing physical therapy, using medications and all that kind of
stuff. We have Dr. Angela Stillwagon here with us. She is doctor of osteopathy. She is a physiatrist. I'm learning all these cool new words today. I cannot wait to play Scrabble again, I promise. She is a doctor of physical medicine and rehabilitation, and she is the assistant professor of neurology and rehabilitation medicine at the University of Cincinnati. You can find out more at uchealth.com. We always love when UC sends wonderfully passionate physicians out here to talk with us about this. We have Tom on hold, and we'll go to Tom. When we come back from Tom, I want to ask you, what is the difference between what you do versus, let's say, somebody who goes to a chiropractor? We'll talk about that coming up here. Right now, Tom, you've been holding on patiently. You're on with Dr. Stillwagon. Thank you for holding.
Sure. I just have a question. My understanding is states license physicians and DOs are only licensed in certain states. Since you're going out on the internet, that might be of interest to folks.
Yeah, we could get a license in every state.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Wow, I thought only certain states licensed DOs.
Nope, not any longer. No, we could get licensed anywhere.
Okay, I was just wondering about that. Someone told me that at one time. Did that change in the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, I don't know how long ago it did, but yes, it's changed. We can get licensed in any state.
Okay, hey, thanks a lot.
No problem.
Tom, thank you so much, and thank you for the heads up on that. But so, again, this is showing that there is a growing emphasis and a growing understanding of what osteopathy is. So that's really good. Now, let's talk about the musculoskeletal. When you talked about musculoskeletal conditions, that's just one of the many conditions that you deal with. That covers a lot of the anatomy, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. Like I say, people could come in with a strain in their neck, low back. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest, I guess, the majority of people we often happen to see is usually back pain. I mean, that seems like a big percentage of people's complaints, especially if it's, you know, something they did just, you know, the weekend warrior doing too much at home, playing sports with their kids. But yeah, we cover any body part pretty much. We like to do a thorough history and exam to help lead us to where we're going to form our treatment plan.
If someone comes in to see you in an appointment like this, what materials, what information should they bring with them, like lists of medications, maybe past health history, things like that?
Exactly. We would love to know any history, medications they're on, and if possible, and I know it's so hard with all the different names of medications, but if they've tried things in the past, if they would maybe have records of that. And any imaging, x-rays, MRIs, CTs, anything of the area that they have the complaint from, that we could maybe, if we decide to repeat it, we can compare the two.
And I would think also, because you're dealing a lot of times with issues where pain is involved, I think a lot of people, when they come in to see you, maybe they're not on a prescription pain reliever or an anti-inflammatory that is prescription strength. And often they'll walk in with a list of all the things that they got from their local pharmacy, but on there is not all the things. They might be taking, ibuprofen, they might be taking naproxen or something like that. it really helps, I would imagine, in your position especially, to know everything.
Yep, any supplements, anything they're taking, yeah, extra. Yep, that's exactly right.
So once again, very, very important. And it really does help to have some of that information when you walk in, or if you're like me, bringing in your spouse or somebody
exactly.
who knows all the things that you take, if you can't always remember everything that you take. So I mentioned that we would get to this before the halftime break here in the program. And that is, some people are saying, well, he's talking to a DO or a doctor of osteopathy, physical medicine and rehabilitation doctor. If we say PM&R, that's what we're talking about here. And they'll say, well, geez, that's a chiropractor, right? And there is a difference, correct?
Yeah, we have different training. I mean, we've gone through 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of medical school, and then 4 years of residency. What we can do, I mean, and then chiropractic and or physical therapists, they all have their own special training. But we also, like I say, we could prescribe any medications. We do multiple procedures. We order imaging. So that's really the big difference that we could do. You know, we've had a little more training, and we could do the medications and procedures.
And one of the other things that you mentioned earlier in the program that I think a lot of people really need to understand is that the schism is no longer there, to the point where you're often referred, you have patients referred to you by MDs who will say, you know, this is something that we kind of need a little bit more of a specialty here, where we need somebody to look at this a little bit more closely. And I may not have the expertise in this area. So there are actual physician referrals as well as people just making regular appointments, correct?
Sure. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, again, we have Dr. Angela Stillwagon here with us, and she is a physiatrist with UC Health. We're talking about physical medicine and rehabilitation, or PM&R, and here on WMKV and WLHS HealthScope. By the way, if you'd like to join the conversation, it is 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. Let's talk about some of the chronic musculoskeletal conditions that people might have. Where are most of these pinpointed, and what are some of the things that people come in complaining about?
So, like I say, most of them, a lot of them are, I would say, chronic low back, maybe hip pain and knee pain. And so what we would do is our conservative treatment, like I say, and that's what we do. We focus on conservative treatment first. We would consider doing, you know, like you mentioned before, anti-inflammatory, as long as the patient can tolerate it. Mm-hmm. We do physical therapy or occupational therapy, depending on the body part where we're focusing on, and then to help their mobility, their function, make sure they could get around safely. We could help order any bracing or assistive devices, meaning canes, walkers, anything if someone needs that, if they're at risk of falling. Then we could also determine if the patient's a good candidate for some type of an injection, a cortisone injection. We also are doing ultrasound-guided exam, so we'll put the ultrasound probe over the joint we're looking at, and it's nice because we can do exam with it. We could bend it, have the patient move a certain way, and see exactly how it's functioning, and or do an injection with that ultrasound on, so we make sure we're in the right appropriate place.
And I'll tell you, I think a lot of people listening go, oh, those are pains and aches that old people get. Yeah. But these could be sports injuries.
Exactly.
These could be overuse injuries, I would imagine. Again, traumatic injuries as well. So it's not just something. I think people might have heard canes and walkers and
sure.
think, oh, I have a 50-year-old cousin who just literally has been battling Charcot syndrome, who was on a walker at the age of 50.
Yeah.
There are times where somebody in their 20s, depending on a surgery or something, procedure they may have had, where they may be on a walker temporarily.
Exactly.
Something like that. So, again, don't just think when we talk about some of these issues that, oh, it's arthritis. Well, it's always older people. Well, it's not always older people.
Yep. And it could be, I mean, athletes. I mean, we see athletes as well. So we see really any age. Like I say, it could be a tendonitis, or people often heard of bursitis, where one of the bursas get inflamed. Like I say, so there's all different, you know, ages we see for multiple different complaints. So like I say, we sometimes, I would say a lot of people sometimes, if one of the physicians our referring physicians, they're not quite sure what to do. They often give us a call and say, hey, can you help me out because I'm having a hard time treating this patient. So like I say, we try to really examine the patient, make sure that we could help them with any of the deficits or impairments they're having.
And you were even talking about some things like we'll try different types of medications maybe as a first line if it's something that can be alleviated with an anti-inflammatory or something like that. You go all the way to the injections, and I'm one of those people who has like bone on bone in the knee.
Exactly.
And I will tell you, trying all the other things, I was still having some severe pain. Talked to, I don't know if it was an osteopath that I saw at that particular time, but ended up, after trying numerous things, actually getting an injection in the knee. And knock on wood, you're going to hear all the springs on all the microphone things there, but knock on wood, I'm going on like 4 months with absolutely no pain in that knee. And they've done x-rays and said it's bone on bone.
Yep.
So it is amazing what can be done. And I think one of the other things that I'm sure you probably have to fight when people come in and they don't want to fess up to how much it really hurts, or they've gotten used to the pain. And you say, what is pain on maybe a scale of 1 to 10? I don't know if you guys do that or not. But, you know, and then they'll say, oh, it's a 2. It's a 2. And then they admit, though, it's a 2, but I've been experiencing it for 3 years or something like that, which means it's probably more like a 5 or a 6, and they've just kind of gotten used to it.
Yep.
How do you decipher what someone is saying? Can you tell by body language?
Yes, it definitely. And doing some of the maneuvers we do to do the exam, we could see, because they sometimes definitely get a little hesitant when we start when we start working with the joints and stuff. But what, like for your case too, you know, we'd always try to focus on even getting to therapy, because even though you have arthritis there, and maybe at some point in your life you'll end up having a replacement, maybe, we want to keep everything strong, the muscle strong above and below the joint. So even when you're ready to have surgery, we would hope to help your recovery process go even better because you're already strong there. You know, and we also, like I say, we often work with a physical therapist and occupational therapist often when we're treating patients. And one real quick, though, one thing you were saying about bone on bone, some people might say, well, I can't stand, I can't do this for very long because it hurts so bad. And so what we often do is we send patients to aquatic therapy. Going into the water is very nice because the buoyancy of the water takes the pressure off the joint. So what happens is they can still get very strong in the water, but they don't have the pain.
And that is something that is also very important, because a lot of people, they hear the term arthritis, or they're told you have arthritis, and they think, well, geez, there's nothing I can do about that short of either having that joint replaced or literally, you know, getting shots. And I've even heard there are like gels and things that you can put in there as well. But a lot of people don't think about what you were just saying, which is strengthening everything around it, which if you do end up needing a replacement, it does give you the infrastructure around that replacement so that you don't, the therapy should be, theoretically, should be easier, correct?
Yes, And like you say, you're strong. And so, you know, because sometimes people think that they shouldn't, if because they hurt, they can't do anything. But like I say, that's why we try to help encourage them and find a ways to help them get strong. So
if somebody would, let's say somebody has been told, okay, you're going to have, let's say, a knee replacement. Is it too late once they are told they're going to have a knee replacement, maybe in a month or several months, to start strengthening at that point?
No, okay. They definitely should go ahead. Yeah, because I just recently got a referral for just that. They wanted me to help help with the therapies and make sure they're doing the right things in therapy, meaning I would put the order for physical therapy. They would go see the physical therapist, but I would oversee what they're doing to make sure they're strong. In a month's a good time. But, you know, if we could do it before we have more time, that would be wonderful.
Exactly. It's almost like doing pre-therapy.
Yes, exactly.
Pre-therapy in that case. We are going to take a quick break here on the program. Actually, I'll tell you what. Let's squeeze in one more call, and we'll take the break after. Let's go to Joe, who's been waiting patiently on the line. Joe, thank you for holding on. You're on with Dr. Angela Stillwagon from UC Health.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I had a doctor that was a DO, and he sent me to physical therapy. I had a problem with my arm that lasted about 9 months.
Yes.
And he told them what to do, and when I went there for 2 weeks, And believe it or not, I was cured. He gave me all kind of exercises to do and all this sort of stuff. So I just wanted to say the DO came up with that. But he sent me somewhere else to go.
Yeah, so what we do is with the physiatry or the PM&R docs, and that's what we do. We don't really, when we refer a patient to therapy, we don't just write evaluate and treat. We always want to put more things because the findings we found on exam, talking with you and your imaging, reviewing everything, we want them to do specific things. Now, and like I say, therapists have their own training so they could help out and get their input, but that's the real big thing about PM&R is we work as a team, so they can call us, say, hey, I found this today, can we add this to the treatment plan? And that's fine, but really the main thing is when we write therapy orders, we want them to do specific things, and we usually always write that on our prescription, and we don't just write like evaluate and treat, because we know we've diagnosed you with an issue and we want them to follow a certain protocol.
Like I say, 9 months of pain cured in 2 weeks.
Yeah, yep. Isn't it? It's amazing.
And Joe, if I could add one thing to that, you can educate us all right here. It didn't just happen because they gave you a piece of paper with some of the things to do. You actually had to do them, correct?
Well, yeah, the physical therapist made me do things.
Right. Right.
Things to do, and then they did ultrasounds and ultrasonic things.
Yep, that's exactly, yep.
That.
Yep.
But very the doctor good. Prescribed all that, and it fixed it in 2 weeks.
That's wonderful.
That's great.
Joe, thank you for the call today.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much. And the point I was trying to make is that for anybody who's maybe you've just been seeing an osteopath for, let's say, a knee injury or something like that, or just a sore knee or mm-hmm. something, they might give you some things that you can even work on at home. And
yes.
You know what? Those become... They end up sitting on a table somewhere, and a lot of people don't follow through on that, and then they're unhappy because they haven't gotten the results that they were hoping for.
That's exactly right, and that's one big thing that we focus on a lot is educating our patients, because like you said, even after you're feeling better, you still need to do the exercise, stay strong,
so we
prevent any further injuries in the future. So, you know, I tell people, my patients, that you know, it's not like your exercises have to last hours every day. I mean, it's 20 minutes, maybe 15, but you need to maintain it so you don't have any further injuries in the future.
There may even be some things that you may be able to do just sitting at your desk at
exactly.
work even. So little things that ergonomically will help make your body stronger if you just follow what the osteopath or your medical doctor, any of the doctors,
sure.
tell you. So
sure.
it's really important, though, to follow that, because I know a lot of people, and I'm one of them, who is not always followed. And it's kind of like the person who stops their antibiotics early,
sure.
who says, oh, I started feeling great, so I stopped the antibiotics, you know, halfway through the run. It's the same kind of thing, though, with treating muscles, with nerves, with tendons, with
exactly.
all of this, is if it helped get you to feeling better, it just kind of goes to follow that if you continue to do this at least occasionally, it should help you continue to feel better.
Exactly. Yep.
Very good. Well, I learned something today. Dr. Angela Stillwagon, our special guest here, she is practicing at both Westchester Hospital and at Drake Hospital. She is a physiatrist at UC Health in Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, assistant professor of neurology and rehabilitation medicine at the University of Cincinnati. You can find out more. You can make appointments at 513-475-8730, or you can find out more at uchealth.com. We also have open phone lines here on the program, and we still have a half an hour left in the show. You can join us at 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. Back with more of HealthScope in a moment.
The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program or of WMKV Radio, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS Radio, the Lakota Local School District, or its staff or management. Discussion of specific points and general topics on this program are not meant to be taken as specific professional advice.
We welcome you back to HealthScope here on WMKV and WLHS. Our very special guest here, I believe her first time here in the studio ever with us, Dr.
Yes.
Dr. Angela Stillwagon. doctor of osteopathy and a physiatrist at UC Health. And we will run down some of her other credentials here as we go. But today we're talking about physical medicine and rehabilitation. We call it PM&R, and it's like PB&J.
Yeah. No,
but PM&R, and we're talking about everything from musculoskeletal injuries to nerve injuries, things that cause nerve impingements and all that. One of the things, the terms that we hear a lot is something called a slipped disc.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what in the dickens is a slipped disc when we have these back issues.
Well, when you have back pain, so I'm going to probably repeat myself a couple times on certain
That's
things
okay.
we do. But like I say, people come in, they'll say that they've been told they have a slipped disc. So, you know, it's hard to talk over the radio about it. But what we often do is, like I say, we'll get a thorough history and do an exam. We'll show the patients the spine, what the nerves do. There's nerves that come out at every level, and we have shock absorbers or discs between each vertebra. And sometimes those discs sort of stick out a little bit. They could touch the nerve and irritate it, and then you would get pain that could radiate down a leg or an arm, depending on where this disc is protruding or bulging, sometimes people say. But that, you know, you could have discomfort, but it doesn't always have to cause pain. So what we typically do for these kind of patients is we start conservatively, which would be maybe some anti-inflammatories. We would do physical therapy. That can include, like one of the callers mentioned, doing ultrasound. We'd have the therapist maybe work with doing ultrasound, electrical stimulation, maybe even traction. But we'd write that on our prescription. We possibly might need some further imaging, which could include x-rays, MRIs, or CTs. And then if the symptoms still persist and they're having pain going down a leg or an arm, we might do a test that evaluates the health of the nerve, which is called an EMG.
So
lot of information.
That's a lot of info, and that's why we have people here who understand this far better than we, the radio host, when we're talking with osteopathy in this case. But the slip disc, and again, I think until you have real back pain, you really don't understand. If somebody says, oh, I've got a bulging disc or a pain or a disc pain, I don't think anybody who hasn't had that can really know. And I've never had that, but I can't even begin to imagine what kind of pain that must be. And then you get things like referred or reflected pain or things like that.
Exactly.
And so is it sometimes hard to pinpoint where the real cause of the injury or the irritation is?
And that is very true. We focus, and that's what sometimes, you know, people – we start assessing other areas, and people might say, well, that's not where my pain's at. But that's what you said. There's often referred pain. So we do, like I say, the thorough exam. And then, like I say, sometimes we have them go to therapy, get things calmed down a little bit. Maybe it'll help localize the pain for us. So then we can maybe then address that pain. And so sometimes it's in steps. You know, typically the pains have occurred over a time period. It's, you know, there are acute pains, but sometimes people come in and say, I've had it for 10 years. Well, it's been there for a while, so it's going to take us a little while, not 10 years to resolve it, but to take care of it and figure out where the source is. So that's what we try to explain to the patient. It just, you know, they have to give us some time to try to tease this out, to figure out where the source is, so we could address it appropriately.
I don't know how much or how true to life Joe's experiences as far as the common treatment. Mm-hmm. But he was saying that within a couple of weeks, he was already experiencing literally lack of pain. It was a quantum leap for him.
Sure.
Does it sometimes take a little while, though, to work
exactly
through some of this? So people shouldn't expect that suddenly in one day or something like that, that this is going to alleviate all pain.
Yeah, and like you also mentioned earlier, you know, the patient needs to, you know, put the work into, you mm-hmm. know, we have to do the exercises. We have to take the medicines if, you know, as long as those are tolerated, but really the exercises, and, you know, sometimes it's, you know, working on weight loss because extra weight does put extra pressure on joints and stuff. So there's things that, you know, but that's what we're here to encourage the patient on, you know, reminding them the importance of all those things.
Yeah. I've got a buddy who says, George, there's a reason your knee hurts. There's a fat guy walking around on it all day. I know it. You know, it's so true. And it's one of those things where either because of lifestyle or whatever, we don't always follow through with all the things we want to do. So maybe if we're having a hard time losing weight, then we have to strengthen.
Sure.
There are ways to kind of compensate maybe a little bit within reason.
Exactly.
But that's where having an osteopath working with your family doctor or whatever.
Yeah.
Really comes in handy. And I have a feeling you probably work closely with MDs a lot on things.
Yeah, well, yeah, everything. There's a lot of DOs and MDs that we work with all the time. You know, so whether it's, like I said, primary care physician, rheumatologists we work with often. We work with sports medicine physicians. Like I said, orthopedics. You know, there's a realm of patients that we work with. And like I say, it could be, you know, even a cancer patient. Just because they have sure. cancer, they might have pains other places that we could help address. So we get referrals from all over.
Very good. We have Dr. Angela Stillwagon here with us. By the way, if you would like to join the conversation, 513-772-9658 or our toll-free number, 877-772-9658. I thank Tom for that call earlier in the show that we found out on this show today that DOs are basically licensed in every state.
Exactly.
Now. And that's another sign that I think is medicine is becoming, and I don't take this in that the categorical word, but as we are becoming more holistic in our approach to things, and I don't mean only what people think of as holistic medicine, but we're looking at the body as a whole.
Exactly.
And that is so important, and that's where osteopathy is now coming into even greater play in the overall well-being of patients.
Exactly, yep.
Very, very important. Let's talk about nerve issues now.
Yes.
You hear things like, oh, somebody has a pinched nerve, or somebody has sciatica, or some of these different things. What happens when we get a pinched nerve?
So a pinched nerve, so in our back, it's, you know, we have our vertebra and the disc once again between them. And sometimes, you know, as we get older or if there's some sort of traumatic thing that occurs, one of those discs or shock absorbers can, how I describe it is those discs are like a jelly donut. There's fluid inside of it.
Getting hungry. Yeah.
that jelly can squirt out. And it could irritate the nerve. Mm-hmm. But so that could pinch the nerve a little bit. Also, we can have arthritis as we get older. Arthritis builds up a little bit. And as they're called foramen or holes as the nerves come out at the spine, those can get pinched a little bit from arthritis. Or it could be a combination of two, a bulge and some arthritis. It pinches the nerve, then it sends a radiating pain down the leg or into the, you know, the gluteal region, the buttocks.
Can we have a pinched nerve in another area of our body? Can it be from arthritis or an injury?
Sometimes, yep. There's nerves around your elbow. People, when you rest your elbow a lot, sometimes it's called your funny bone area. When you hit that nerve can get pinched there at the elbow. You could have a nerve around the knee that gets pinched and can cause some numbness and tingling. So when you do have a nerve injury, or to say that loosely, you also often can get symptoms of numbness and tingling.
I was going to say, we've been talking about pain largely throughout this program, but numbness is another sign that there may be a nerve issue or
in
the case of tingling or,
sure.
you know, kind of getting an odd sensation that you might not normally have. And again, it's always important if you're having any of these, especially tingling or numbness, if it's like in an extremity, probably to check with your MD
pretty
quickly
exactly.
to make sure that you're not having some other issue and it might be beyond a nerve issue.
But, yes, exactly.
Now, but what happens like if I fall asleep at night and my wrist gets turned under or something and it falls asleep? So I'm not doing severe damage to my nerves then, am I?
Well, you could be pinching a little bit. Sometimes a nerve can get inflamed and cause that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we give patients maybe a strong anti-inflammatory to get that nerve, the inflammation out of the nerve, and that could resolve on its own. Sometimes, sometimes we say like truck drivers, they put their elbow outside their window all the time. And if they drive hours and hours, sometimes that pressure is just enough to really, you know, day after day after day. And over time, they could injure one of the nerves. Potentially.
Wow. I didn't think about that. It's like repetitive pressure.
Yep, exactly. Or like someone who works in with repetitive duties or in a factory where you're doing the same thing over and over again, that could be something you, with your hands especially, could you get carpal tunnel? That is the case. Yeah.
Yeah, you brought that up before the program when I said, oh, I want to ask about some of the more common things. And that's not what I had written down, but yeah, carpal tunnel, for especially for people who are working on keyboards and things like that a lot, or people are using a mouse a lot.
Yep.
We don't think about that. And again, like I don't want to get people panicked now because I mentioned about your hand falling asleep if you, when you wake up in the morning and your hand's kind of numb. If that comes back right away, it's probably nothing to worry about. What we're talking about here is longer term or chronic conditions where you're getting intermittent or regular tingling, numbness, pain.
So, yeah, often like people will come in, if they have carpal tunnel syndromes, they often say they get numbness and tingling in their fingers, especially their thumb and their pointer finger, their middle finger. And these symptoms typically often happen in the middle of the night and they wake you up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people shake their hands out trying to get that feeling back. Then, you know, sometimes people say I have a harder time turning a key to get in my house or start my car. Or I just feel a little weaker, like if I'm holding my coffee cup, it's harder to hold, and I feel like I'm going to drop things. So that, to me, if someone came in and gave me that description, I think I'm definitely going to work on work up for carpal tunnel potentially.
Now, again, I think everybody – everybody knows somebody who's had a surgery for carpal tunnel or something like that. It's like 6 degrees of separation to Kevin Bacon. But that's not the first line, is it, generally?
No. We do, like I say, therapy. Well, first of all, we have to make sure that's what it is.
Right.
Because
right.
That's the thing that's key. Because you could also have a pinched nerve in your neck that mimics carpal tunnel. So that's when it comes in, when I sort of real quickly mention what's an EMG. And that's a nerve test. It tests the health of the nerve as it comes out of the spine and down the arm. And there's two parts to the test. What we're assessing is we're trying to localize where the nerve is injured. Mm-hmm. And that test can determine if it's at the carpal tunnel or is it coming from the neck. And so then, like you said, we don't want to have someone have surgery and then find out it's not better if that's not the right diagnosis. So we definitely usually always get an EMG to evaluate, you know, if there's a possible discrepancy of what's going on.
It's kind of like I would imagine bringing in an electrician. If you've got a short somewhere in the house, but you're not sure where it is between the, you know, where the electric comes into the house and the lamp.
Exactly.
You need somebody who can actually kind of decipher that and send the signal, which really that's what our nerves do, right?
They're
sending impulses.
Right. Yep.
So that's very important. I want to come back to one other musculoskeletal thing that you mentioned before, and I kind of glossed over it because we had calls, and that's very important. But you mentioned bursitis.
Yes.
What is the bursa, and where can we feel bursitis?
Okay, so bursas are actually all over our body. There are multiple joints, and we often have multiple bursas at each joint. And they help try to make our range of motion more fluid. Our tendons end up going over them, so when we want to lift our arm overhead, it's a little more fluid movement. But for whatever reason is if you lay on your arm or your hip for a long time, some other muscles are tight, and they flip over this bursa, which is a fluid-filled sac, it could just get inflamed. So a bursitis is an inflammation of this fluid sac. And what we would do to treat it, you know, we could try some therapy. Sometimes it's just so tender that we actually could just inject it. And we could do that right in the office. Often we can do that under ultrasound to make sure we're right in the bursa, putting the medicine in the exact spot. Or sometimes we don't need the ultrasound, but it just depends. But usually a cortisone injection or a steroid injection, anti-inflammatory.
And sometimes, at that point, are you treating the symptom or
cause? Well, the symptom, but then we make sure that if the muscles, like sometimes a lot of people come in with hip bursitis a lot, mm-hmm. and it's called greater trochanteric bursitis, which is just the location of it.
There won't be a quiz later.
No quiz. But one of the muscles, tendons goes over that. And so sometimes, like I say, if that muscle's tight and it's rubbing, making that tendon rub over it, well, then we got to work on loosening that muscle up so it doesn't keep recurring.
So sometimes you might be treating the symptom, but then you can give the patient some ideas about what to do to prevent that symptom maybe from coming back.
Exactly.
And that's really the double prong, if you will, of trying to come after this issue of pain, numbness, tingling, Dr. Angela Stillwagon here with us. She practices at Drake and Westchester Hospitals. She's a physiatrist at UC Health, an assistant professor of neurology and rehab medicine at University of Cincinnati. I should say rehabilitation medicine.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about physical medicine and rehabilitation today. You can find out more at uchealth.com. A time for maybe a call yet if you'd like to squeeze one in, but I have plenty of questions here too. You can join us at 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. Coming back to nerves.
Sure.
We were talking about this before the show, so I want to get this question in because you floored me with the answer when I asked it before the show. I remember all through grade school. Now, again, I'm kind of a little older, and through high school, even all the things we kept learning about nerves was that nerves, once they're damaged, they don't seem to heal, or they don't heal quickly, or they can't regenerate. And you were saying au contraire.
Well, yeah. So nerves can heal. Now, often it just depends how bad it is, what type of nerve injury. So like I say, I'm going to be sort of a little general here.
Okay,
but
sure.
Nerves can heal, they say, often a millimeter a day or an inch a month. So it can take time. So, but the thing is, you know, I'll be honest. So I've had some patients come in and they've had really bad carpal tunnel or something. And that's, like I say, a nerve injury. And they said, oh, I could take the pain or the numbness and tingling. I'm just going to let it go. Mm. Well, but the nerves can go to a point where they're so damaged that even if you'd have a surgery to repair it, they can't recover because it's been so long. So that's why some of these people who try to put things off, you know, we like to get them involved, you know, take help, educate them on things so we can keep an eye on it so that doesn't ever lead to that problem. But yes, definitely nerves can regenerate. They get symptoms, you know, can get better, but people just have to understand it might not be a month or two. It could be a year, but, you know, it's a slow process.
I mentioned earlier in the program that you work with a lot of MDs. What other specialists, what specialists do you find yourself working most with? I imagine a lot of sports medicine people, things like that.
We work with neurology. Mm-hmm. We work with sports medicine, orthopedic surgeons, rheumatology. We often do a lot of testing for podiatrists or doctors that work with the feet and ankles. People could get pinched nerves down there as well. And mm-hmm. so we would help do like the EMG to help determine if a certain procedure would be needed for them.
And also to help pinpoint where that actual injury or problem is. That's amazing. And one of the things I already kind of understand this, but I want to drive this point home in our final minute or two here, is the fact that physical medicine and rehabilitation physicians are not just a reactive area of medicine. You can be proactive in helping people avoid injury or avoid something becoming worse. Is that true?
That's
prevention.
Exactly, yeah. So that's the key that we do. We want to make sure the patient understands any process going on in their body. We want to educate them. And like you said, we want to prevent anything from getting worse or reoccurring. So if we teach them about their body, get them into the appropriate therapies if they need it, or like I say, just understanding what caused the problem, then maybe that could be preventative in the future.
So one of the goals I would imagine is that pain that started out as a 6, we've gotten used to it now. We're just saying, oh, it's only a 2. I can live with this. Is to get that down to a 0, theoretically.
Yes, theoretically.
That's right. Dr. Stillwagon, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed myself.
Dr. Angela Stillwagon, she is a physiatrist at UC Health, the assistant professor of neurology and rehabilitation medicine at University of Cincinnati. And again, if you want more information on her department, you can find out more at 513-475-8730. Thank you to UC Health and UC Westchester. Dr. Stillwagon also practices not just at Westchester, but at Drake Hospital as well. Thank you for all the expertise you brought with us and for just brightening our day here.
Thank
you so much. Dr. Angela Stillwagon, our special guest today on HealthScope. Thanks for being with us.
You've been listening to HealthScope on WMKV and WLHS, and streaming around the world at WMKVFM.org. Join us each week at this time for a discussion of the latest in medical technology issues and topics on 89.3 WMKV, 89.9 WLHS, and online at WMKVFM.org.